This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace, the easiest way to create beautiful blogs and websites and push content to your social networks.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 84, Holographic American History Month. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a new 4-CD collection of music from DS9, upcoming TNG Blu-rays, the Best of Both Worlds theatrical event, the Star Trek Into Darkness iPhone app, and what we learned from the Into Darkness Super Bowl spot. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt to discuss the Voyager episode, The Killing Game. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing well. Actually, I have an announcement to make, Chris. I am better.
At what, Greg?
Everything.
Oh. You must be Khan.
Khan! Oh, goodness. No, I was watching the Super Bowl yesterday.
Oh,
we have a slightly delayed episode recording today because of the Super Bowl, which, of course, was the Super Bowl Into Darkness. Because not only was it a Super Bowl 47, and there was a Star Trek Into Darkness trailer, but also all the lights went off in the middle of the game. So
I know, you know, I thought that was a really, really clever promotion that they were doing right there. I was just waiting for the lens flares to start lighting up the field.
Yes, that would have been fun. And StarTrek.com put an article up today talking about how it is the Super Bowl Into Darkness. So now I'm wondering if this wasn't some sort of viral marketing stunt went awry. Of course not, but it was an exciting game. It was a very exciting trailer that we'll be talking about later. Chris, were you able to see the... were you able to see the big game there in Japan?
Well, they do show the big game here in Japan, but it comes on what's called BS, which is... Well, I guess in a way it's an appropriate name because it's... as you know, Greg, because you lived here, it's a type of television channel that you have to pay for. Mm. But it's not cable. You have to put a... In the past, you had to put a dish on your roof. Now you can get over fiber optics. But anyway, it comes on there, and it's a pay thing, and so I didn't have it. So what I ended up resorting to was just kind of following along with Twitter and the ESPN Gamecast, where they do the little graphic of the football field and show the arrows going up.
I'm quite familiar. I used to do that before I bought my TV, my 47-inch TV, to continue the Star Trek-ness. I did use that Gamecast app. It's not a bad way to watch a football game.
Yeah, it's not too bad, except it's like at the end of the game when the 49ers were, I think, on the 5-yard line maybe, and if they score, they're probably going to win the game. There was no suspense there for me with that because the arrow sat there for a long time, and then suddenly Baltimore had the ball. So it's not quite the same, you know, as watching sports ball on television.
Right. Yeah, well, watching that 108-yard kickoff return touchdown, just you had to just be there and watch it live. It's not quite the same seeing the gigantic arrow on Gamecast.
Now, if I'm correct, from what I gather, not being able to actually see the game, the lights went out right after that return, correct? So I think that was a whole setup. That was the Into Darkness thing. I think that return was representing the return of Khan to Earth, and then the lights went out, not in London, but in New Orleans.
I see. This is all coming together. It makes an awful lot of sense.
It's all a setup, completely a setup. All right. Well, why don't we jump on into our news this week, Greg? And the first thing we have up is something that I am very excited about. I have to be honest. It's another one of these soundtrack collections from La La Land Records, but this one is a 4-disc collection from Deep Space Nine.
Yes, and I really like this one because the 4 discs, each one is something special. The first disc is Dennis McCarthy. The second disc is Jay Chataway. Disc 3 is basically, you know, from Gilligan's Island and the rest. So it's a bunch of the other composers that they had on the show. And then disc four is something they're calling the Lost Album, where they've teased that there's going to be music from Our Man Bashir, and who knows what else is going to be on this disc four. It's very intriguing.
I think it's going to have 16 tracks with different Lita squeals on it. Just for you, Greg.
They brought Chase into the studio for some exclusive La La Land record Lita squeals.
Well, they did. You know, you've seen all these pictures of her with the headphones on, recording things for, I think, for Star Trek Online, for other things going on. What they didn't reveal is she was actually just squeeing for this special release of DS9 music and sound effects.
Oh, goodness. People are going to think we're being serious again. Like last week, we understand that that La La Land Records actually is a serious company with serious music.
They are. Yeah, I think some people take our news a little bit too seriously, I think, sometimes. But you know, this is really wonderful because I have some music from Deep Space Nine, but what they've primarily released in the past is the score from Emissary. Yeah. Some bits from The Way of the Warrior, some bits from The Visitor. But unlike the original series, where for a long time you've been able to get, until recently you couldn't get the complete collection of TOS music, but you could get a lot of it.
Right.
And likewise with TNG, especially now with the Ron Jones collection, you can get just about anything you want to hear from TNG.
Yeah.
It's been pretty thin on the DS9 front.
And DS9 had some really, really good music, you know, because it was so expansive. They had the Klingons and the Cardassians and the Bajorans, and then they had all these things like Far Beyond the Stars that we talked about last week. There's a lot of different music. It's not just the same bum, 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 but like that you had in the original series. But it's, no, really, really good music, and it's going to be great to be able to get four solid discs of all of it.
Most definitely. So, and this is only going to run $49.98, which I think, it's a fair price for a four disc set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come out on February 12th. And as far as I know, it's not going to be a super limited edition thing like some of the things they've released are. So you should be able to get your hands on it if you are a DS9 fan.
Yes, definitely. And you know, they talk about that fourth disc. Don't miss that secret track that actually never made it to air, but it's the Andorian fight scene, DS9 style.
How do you give up? Never!
Yeah, you know, there were Andorian fight scenes on DS9 all the time.
Right.
They were always happening on the promenade or in Quarks. The problem is that the camera was always showing us some sort of crisis going
right
on in ops, or, you know, Sisko cooking gumbo for the crew, or, you know, Jake and Nog peeping at Bajoran women as they got off transports. And so we missed all of those appearances by the Andorian.
It's like every time Morin talks. Yeah, we just happen to not be there at the time. But believe me, he is a chatterbox.
He also bets on Andorian fights, which I understand is actually illegal in the Bajoran sector. But, you know, Odo lets it slide because he kind of likes Morin.
I'm worried about the cruelty to Andorians if we really let the betting go on and on. Like, I know you started as fun. You know, the Andorians are fighting anyway. You might as well bet on it. But at some point, you start encouraging it.
Especially if it's going on in Quarks.
Right. And then
absolutely. All right. So I'm looking forward to this one. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Now, Greg, the next story is something that I know that you are especially excited about.
Yes, I'm very excited about the Best of Both Worlds feature length Blu-ray release. Now, we knew about this from a month or so ago. They announced that this was going to be coming. Of course, Best of Both Worlds Part 1 will be on the Season 3 Blu-ray disc, but also they're doing 1 and 2 together in what I believe, and I'm still could be proven wrong, but I believe it is a brand new cut that is feature length. It's not like the releases on VHS where they put both the episodes together. This is actually a new cut that makes it seamless. It remains to be seen. But they're releasing it on Blu-ray. They're also doing a special screening as we predicted, on April 25th. So if you can't quite wait for May 17th for the new Star Trek film, you can get your fix of Star Trek on the big screen on April 25th in, you know, select theaters, et cetera, et cetera.
I really wish I could see that. I would absolutely love to see The Best of Both Worlds on the big screen and remastered.
Yeah.
Like you said, we've known for a while now that this disc was coming out. What we didn't quite know about last time we talked about it was what kind of incentives there would be for people to buy this disc, apart from the fact that, of course, part one, part two wouldn't be split between, you know, two different season sets. And what they say now is that there are going to be some exclusive special features on the Blu-ray that you won't be able to get in the season sets. They have Borg-themed special features, of course, which, you know, that's an interesting decision to me, because the problem is that creatively, it's so obvious that you would go with Borg-themed special features. If I were doing it myself, I think I would most likely go with Shelby-themed.
I was going to say, Commander Shelby-themed. From beginning to end.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you could have like the menus could talk to you. They could be kind of condescending. They'll be like, if you don't start this video now, I will.
That'll be perfect. There can be, you know, Easter eggs where she slips off to deck 8.
That'll be the unrated special features that are hidden. Kind of like on the Deep Space Nine DVDs.
Right.
I don't know if you know this, but if you explore, there are lots of Easter eggs hidden. You have to like click around and like little bitty bits of the station will highlight. And you click them and there will be like a 2-minute interview with Terry Farrell or Armin Shimerman.
So you just have to do a lot of clicking around Commander Shelby and you find things.
You find a lot if you click around Commander Shelby.
Ask
Riker.
The Borg theme menus will be interesting. Of course, we've seen Borg theme menus in like First Contact. The Blu-ray for that was Borg themed, and it's fine. We'll see what it looks like in Blu-ray. Hopefully, it'll look nice. I love the cover art, and as we know now, it's like a fold-out cover with more than just the face of Locutus. Really, really great artwork. I mean, better than anything they've put out in quite some time. It's like they gave this to an actual artist and asked him to make something.
Imagine that.
I know.
Oh, so that'll be nice. And they also have an all-new audio commentary, which for me would be worth buying the disc no matter what, just to get the audio commentary.
I don't think they say who the audio commentary is. Like, are they just getting Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis to come in and, and go on and on about... You did see this episode, didn't you?
Right. I don't know. Maybe they're going to bring in Stuart Baird and he's going to talk about all the ways he would have recut this episode.
Well, clearly you need to cut out the whole Shelby subplot. She's just not helping the episode at all.
Right. And that whole Locutus thing, it was just kind of wasting screen time.
Right. So the audio commentary also is going to be feature length. So it's not going to be on the Blu-ray sets. So if you want to hear this mysterious audio commentary, you have to actually buy the standalone disc. I feel like I'm going to buy the standalone disc. I feel kind of bad about it, but I feel like it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'll buy it. It's not expensive. It's only... Actually, I checked just before we went on the air, and I still did not see a pre-order page on the US Amazon site. But on the UK Amazon site... They are selling it for £10, basically, as pre-order. So it's really inexpensive. And, you know, just for the audio commentary itself, it's fine. And it has a gag reel. I'm just imagining what kind of gags we'll see from The Best of Both Worlds.
I really can't wait to see Locutus yucking it up between takes. It's going to be great. But, yeah, I mean, if I see it for like $9.99 or $14.99 at Target, definitely going to snatch it up. It's hardly even a question, considering they are putting some extra special features on it. And, you know, what we've been seeing of the effects in season 3 have been just stunning. And when we see it on the big screen, I know I'm just going to say, I want to go home and buy that right now.
I most definitely would. While we're on the topic of TNG, the season 3 Blu-ray artwork is out and the pre-order page is up on Amazon. And the pre-order price at the moment is $90.99. So I assume that, as we've seen with Season 1 and Season 2, at some point that's probably going to hit around the $60 range,
right,
as we get closer to the April 30th release date.
And I should probably go ahead and lock in a pre-order so that I can get that cheapest price. I actually finally ordered my Season 2 Blu-ray because Amazon put it on sale for, I think, $62.95. So that ended up not being too bad. So I went ahead and just bought it, even though I'm not that excited for Season 2, honestly. But Season 3, I am very excited for, as I was saying, with the special effects looking amazing. It has some great episodes. I mean, they mentioned there's commentaries for Yesterday's Enterprise and Sins of the Father, which we saw Sins of the Father in that preview Blu-ray. But still, it's a great episode. Yesterday's Enterprise is really good. So just those, and there's plenty on Season 3 that I really can't wait to see, especially in HD with the CBS remastered effects.
Yesterday's Enterprise will be a very interesting commentary, depending on who they get to do it.
It's just going to be Denise Crosby. Just going to bring her in, say, Denise, just say whatever you want, all episodes. It's fine. Well, we won't even cut it.
The thing is, you may be right about that. I would love to hear two or three of the writers get together and talk about how it came together, because that episode was kind of famously rushed and they kind of felt like they were throwing something together and it wasn't going to turn out. And then it ends up being one of the greatest episodes of The Next Generation. And I would love to hear from them firsthand, because I've heard about it more secondhand mostly, how that all went down. That would be nice if they can bring them in for that.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be awesome. I mean, it's kind of Next Generation's Mirror Universe episode. So if you could have, I mean, just get Ronald D. Moore in. You know, they've already said Ronald offered just to come in and record commentaries for all of his episodes. So just having RDM there would be fantastic. But I mean, yeah, if you get Ira Stephen Bear in as well, and Richard Manning, Heinz Beimler, that's going to be a great, great show, and a little bit better, I think, than just doing an actor's commentary. Actors' commentaries can be fun, but they're not usually as informative as when you actually get the production staff there.
Now, are they going to have a big stock of whiskey and cigars for Ronald D. Moore when he comes in to do those commentaries?
I really hope.
Like he did on his Battlestar Galactica wins?
So say we all.
I hope they do, and I also hope they don't, because I haven't smoked since Battlestar Galactica ended, and I don't want to start again. But if I hear that... and then the clink, clink. Sorry if I'm triggering anyone right now, but I'm a little worried what would happen if they really get Ronald D. Moore going as he did on those Battlestar commentaries.
Greg, just because someone doing a commentary is smoking a cigar and you can't see them, it doesn't mean you have to smoke one too.
I do. I really. Oh man, it's bad. It's bad.
Oh, so some extras that are going to be on this set, besides the commentaries we just mentioned, there's going to be the continuation of the TNG documentary, and this one is called Resistance is Futile. There's going to be a special tribute to Michael Piller, who we all know passed away a few years back and was instrumental to modern Star Trek. And there's going to be a new gag reel.
Of course, got to have a gag reel.
Yeah, and then there's going to be this writer's room feature, which, as we're just talking about here, is probably going to be my most anticipated special feature on the disc, just, again, because I like the creative stuff.
Well, because you're such a huge fan of Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I like him just fine. I just wasn't sure way, way back on a past show when we talked about him helming some new Star Trek television series. I was just a little bit skeptical about that.
He was there. I guess he's on the Season 2 disc, but he was up on the big screen at the Season 2 theater event, just one of the guys they were talking to. And everyone was kind of like, wait, was that Seth MacFarlane? What is going on here? Like, I don't think anyone hates Seth MacFarlane outside of people who just love to hate him. But there's a little bit of confusion. No, he is a huge Star Trek fan. And I'm actually really looking forward to seeing him sitting down with Brandon Braga, Ron D. Moore, Rene Echevarria, and Naren Shenkar. I think that's going to be really great. I'm kind of torn. Do I want them to show that on the big screen or this Resistance is Futile documentary? Both of those sound incredible.
I think I would want to see the Resistance is Futile on the big screen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, having the writers sit around and talk, that's something good to pop in your Blu-ray, grab a drink, just sit back and relax at home and watch that.
That's probably true. But either way, this set, I'm very, very looking forward to. This is the episode where they grew the beard this is the season. Like, we've finally gotten there. So I'm really excited for this actually to be released. Now, it's same time, right, as the Best of Both Worlds release. It's going to be April 30th in the States.
Right. April 30th in the States, and as I understand, April 29th in the UK. So just like in the movie, you know, with the almost completely British cast, our friends over in the UK, they're getting a jump on us again. So
exactly.
And I guess for me, it's probably coming out like December or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No.
Over here in Japan.
Well, that's why you can just go to Amazon.com and pay whatever it costs to have it shipped over there.
You know, the thing, as we've talked about before, for me, pre-ordering this stuff from the States and paying the shipping, it still comes out to be like a third of what right. the price on Amazon Japan would be. So it's no problem for me.
It's rough.
Let's talk about one other Blu-ray thing here real quick. This news just came out, and I guess we're kind of uncertain if we're really getting this or not. But they say they're releasing individual films on Blu-ray to coincide with the TNG release on April 30th. And they mentioned Star Trek The Motion Picture as possibly being the director's cut, which is not included in this Blu-ray set that they released previously of original series films.
Right. I mean, it's exciting, okay, that they're releasing each one individually so you don't have to buy the whole set, which I did.
But is that not the case? Because in Japan, we can get all of the films on Blu-ray individually, yeah.
That is not the case here. You have to buy the full set. I mean, maybe you can find Nemesis on Blu-ray somewhere. I'm not sure. The only place I've seen them is if you buy the whole 2009 Blu-ray set of either TOS or TNG, yeah.
I didn't realize that because I actually have a lot of individual ones here that I've just picked up.
Now, one thing they do is they put them on iTunes where you can download them individually. Yeah. And they're showing up sporadically on Netflix. Right now, you can actually watch Search for Spock, and it's actually highlighting it right now. Like, come watch Search for Spock, which is pretty cool. But as far as going out and buying the individual Blu-rays, it's been really hard. So that's nice that they're at least doing that this year. The question is, yes, is it going to be the director's cut that they did not make a Blu-ray of? The director's cut, I think everyone pretty much agrees, is much better than the film that ended up coming out. Robert Wise never got a chance to see the finished cut before the film was rushed into theaters. They had a lot of ideas, a lot of things they needed to do better. It's cut down. Effects are made better. Lots of things. Lots of things are better. I hate watching the original cut of the motion picture. And I really like actually watching the director's cut. So, that aside, it says in the press release that it's the director's cut, but there's some question because Trek Movie actually reached out to Darren Doctorman, who worked on the original director's cut, and he basically said, no one's talked to me about it, and that the effects would have to be done in HD. They were originally done just for the DVD quality.
Okay.
They never rendered it. You know, they didn't render it 2K and then bring it down. They just made it DVD quality, which that seems like a dumb idea, but considering the budget they're working with for a remastering of a 20-year-old film, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. Hopefully there will be some clarification in the coming weeks, or we'll just have to rush out and buy it and see what it actually is.
That's interesting because I was going to say that I assume it'll probably be the director's cut because it's not out on Blu-ray right now. Fans have been clamoring for it, so the studio can just put that out on Blu-ray. But I didn't know that the effects would need to be redone, so that is a little bit of an obstacle. And if he doesn't know anything about it,
right,
then...
And that's what Trek Movie reported. That's what we're going on as far as right now. Hopefully there will be a clarification, you know, maybe even by the time the show is out, with some more information. We're coming up on it quickly. It's April 30th, so it's about 2 months away. we'll definitely know for sure. This is the one individual disc that I will buy if it is the director's cut. The other ones, I already own them, so I won't need to. But it'll be nice for people just needing to round out their library. People don't necessarily want to buy Star Trek V, or some people don't like Star Trek IV. These crazy, crazy people.
Who doesn't like Star Trek IV?
Crazy, crazy people. I wouldn't know anything about that, Chris.
Crazy, crazy people with the last name Harbin?
Maybe. I don't know. Cray, cray.
Do all Harbins hate Star Trek IV?
Well, I was
in the blood or something.
I was brought up in a very accepting household, but there's some things we just could not stand.
Oh, all right. Well, I even if it doesn't come out right now, I am sure that at some point the studio, just for preservation purposes, will get the director's cut onto Blu-ray. So
yeah, maybe we can get it into theaters for the 40th anniversary or something.
I would be curious to see how many people would go see it.
Yeah.
I think people like to say that the motion picture sucks, but I think that people actually have a certain soft spot for that movie because it was the first and it was the one that got everything rolling again. So
there's a lot of good in it. I think, you know, that 42-minute TOS Phase 2 cut that someone made is better than what they ended up releasing. But there's a lot of moments that you miss when you do cut it down that much. It is a great movie, and the budget just makes it amazing. You know, this is the movie where the Enterprise feels like a big ship. It doesn't feel like a submarine, and I think these ships would feel big.
I thought you were going to say that 42-minute flyby of the Enterprise in space dock.
Well, that's what the cut basically cuts out. Just basically, they start going, there's another shot, and then they're there. It's like, it's done. But those are some beautiful shots. Sure, they're very, very, very long, but they are nice. Robert Wise knew what he was doing to some extent.
They really are. And at the time it was made, that felt more appropriate cinematically, I think, than it does now. So, all right. Well, let's take a break from news for a moment, Greg, and talk about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, each week that goes by, I've actually been hearing more and more of our listeners who have said that they have listened to what we've said about Squarespace, and they've gone over and they've signed up and they're really loving the service.
That's really fantastic. I know I've been hearing it too. You know, I look at the Trek FM feed, people are responding to us asking, what can I do with Squarespace? What's that code again? People are really excited to start making sites. I've been dabbling about with it a little bit. Still don't have a reason to have a website, but the tools themselves are fun to play with.
They definitely are. It's so easy to build a blog or a full-blown website, depending on your needs. And, you know, each time we talk about this, we're trying to talk about some of the different aspects of it because it's a very robust service. And so today, what I wanted to talk a little bit about and share with everyone is on the back end, and it's the real-time statistics that give you great audience insight. And, you know, Trek FM is built on Squarespace. And for us, knowing who is visiting our site, you know, how they're finding us, what kind of numbers we're getting each day for page views and visitors and all this analytics is very important for what we're doing. And over the years, I have used a lot of different systems for tracking analytics. I am a marketer. Mm-hmm. I've been marketing director for technology companies for more than a decade. And so I have to track all this information. I have to say that I've never found a system that was as pleasant to use as Squarespace. They have a beautiful activity views that give you a traffic overview, which you can view hourly, daily, weekly, or monthly. They give you a beautifully formatted list of referrers, your popular content, your subscribers. So if, like us, if you have content that you push out by RSS, like we do with our podcasts, people are hitting that from iTunes, hitting it from Stitcher, from Downcast, other places, you can get that view there too to find out, you know, how much traffic you're getting on a daily basis. Search queries, finding out what keywords people are using and what kind of results they're getting and how they get there. And then you get actually a detailed activity view minute by minute. So you can see, you know, every page view in your site. You can see the time it happened, how long people spent on there. Just really fantastic tools.
And now, Squarespace will, of course, let you use Google Analytics or Mint or whatever else you want to use. Would you still use the Squarespace built-in tools over any of those third parties?
Well, that's a really good point. Because like you said, they do let you use those. Not only do they let you use those, they actually have it integrated into Squarespace. So let's say you're using Google Analytics, which is probably the most popular analytics tool these days. You have an ID code for your Google Analytics, and you just go in the admin interface of your Squarespace site, and there's just a field right there. It says Google Analytics, and you just plug in your number, and you're done. You know, you don't have to do any kind of digging in the code and embedding scripts anywhere. You just drop it in. Same for Discuss, the commenting system, which we used on Trek FM. You just plug in your Discuss code right there, and you're done. Amazon, if you sell products on your website through Amazon, like if you're in the referral program and you have that little code, you just put in your Amazon code right there in the Squarespace interface and you're done.
Wow.
And it's actually really cool. Like if you take, let's say you write a book review and you want to pull in the cover art for that book review, you know, you could go out on the web and you could find that cover art and you could bring it in and drop it in. And format it yourself in Photoshop and such. It's great. But in Squarespace, if you plug in your affiliate ID, you can just drag down the little Amazon item module right there in your book review, type in the name of the book. It'll pull the cover up for you automatically, drop it right on the page. You can resize it, and it'll put a buy on Amazon button underneath it that's tied into your Amazon affiliate account. It's absolutely the easiest way I've ever seen.
That's really fantastic.
Connect. Yeah, Amazon items on your site.
Because I know a lot of people fund their websites through Amazon affiliate links, you know, because people are there to read their reviews and they just go to buy the product. It's a lot better than messing around with trying to do advertising. And that they make it that easy where it's just drag it in, type in the name of the book. That makes it really easy to do what you do best, which is write that review, but still be making money and having a site that looks good.
It absolutely is because, yeah, the site looks fantastic when you do it this way. And it's like zero effort on your part. It's has made my life a lot easier for all the sites that I work on. Because just about every site I work on, save maybe one with a client where I can't move it, is built on Squarespace now because I've come to trust them so much over the 5 years or so that I've been using them. So the analytics tools here are just one of the many, many features in Squarespace, and we would love for you to try it out for yourself. Squarespace has a special offer for Trek FM listeners. If you go to squarespace.com/trek, you can try it free for 14 days. There's absolutely no obligation on your part. You know, they don't ask you for a credit card. You just go sign up. You get access for 14 days to every feature in Squarespace. You can build a site. You can take it for a spin yourself. And we promise you that you'll love it and you'll want to sign up. And when you do sign up, you can use offer code TREK2. That's TREK2 because this is February now. And that'll get you 10% off of your lifetime purchase with Squarespace. The pricing is extremely reasonable. The unlimited package, which gives you all the bells and whistles, is only $16 a month. And if you don't think you need that, they also have another package for $8, which gives you pretty much everything you would need, you know, if you're building a blog, personal website anyway. But the $16 package gives you all the power to build a website as large as you can imagine. So go check them out, squarespace.com/trek, and use offer code TREK2, and you'll be supporting Trek FM, helping us bring this programming to you and supporting our sponsor at the same time.
All aboard the Botany Bay, 85 people floating through space. Checking the computer reveals that they're supermen. First there's Khan, he almost died. He may have fooled LT MacGyvers, but he's not a nice guy. Kirk and Spock and Bones try to research where these people have been. Out that they are relics from the eugenics wars.
Well, Greg, as we move into movie news and rumors, I think that our friends in 5-Year Mission have a point. You know, I didn't get to see The Big Game, but I did get to see the trailer for the movie that was in it. And I have to say, I watched it and I immediately texted, okay, he's con.
Yeah, it's the line that we referenced earlier in the show, which is, I'm better than you at everything.
Yeah.
from Con Brabach. I saw Inequal News called him Con Brabach today. I think they must be listeners to the show.
Gee. Yeah. Over there. We've never done that before 9 months ago, have we?
so you're pretty sure, based on this amazing trailer, that it's Con?
You know, I kind of am. I've been resistant to it, and you know, we had our talk with John Tenuto, and I thought he made a pretty good case, although I was still kind of skeptical about it. I've read some other things. I have heard some other information, which I won't talk about, that makes me pretty sure that it's Khan. And then when I was watching this, and we got to that line,
yeah,
and he said, I am better. And Kirk says, at what? And he says, everything. I said, okay, he's Khan.
Yeah. Honestly, I think they kind of screwed up by, well, I think they screwed up by casting or putting a call out for people like Benicio del Toro. Like, right off the bat, people were saying Con, and I don't think they wanted it to be known that early, so they've been just playing this game. I think they wanted just to cast a guy and have him be Harrison and then reveal it's Con slowly. But they've been so adamant that it's not Khan. I think it's because it leaked so early. They feel it necessary to screw with us and make us wonder. But I think all the evidence that we've been seeing, there's no reason to discount it.
Right. Yeah. Now, I still don't know if he's going to be called Khan in the movie or if he's going to be called John Harrison. And it's the Khan character, but somehow it's different. But I don't know what I was thinking in terms of a storyline, because we've already known that he's in one of the other trailers. I think he says that I'm back or I've returned or something like that. You know, it's and we know that they were going to have that little Botany Bay floating in space at the end of the 2009 movie. This is Khan coming back. He's not discovered, you know, the Enterprise doesn't discover the Botany Bay like they do in the Prime Universe. This is simply Khan, somehow, some other way, he's being woken up, possibly by Peter Weller's character. And now that he's awake, he's coming back to Earth. And I don't know. I don't have fleshed out all the details of the story, but I kind of think that's probably the basic premise of this movie.
Now, let me ask you one thing. Is there a chance he's not Khan, but he's another augment leader from the Eugenics Wars, like someone who just anything. We know that Khan was ruling Europe. Maybe this guy was ruling North America or, you know, anywhere else.
That's very possible. And I hope that's the case, because I think it will make it easier for fans to tie this into canon. I've heard fans talk about how you can't make any changes to Khan. It's canon. But, you know, these are two different universes, and I'm personally not that invested in whether the Abrams verse is canon or not.
Yeah.
So I really don't care what they do with it. But
but
what you say is interesting, and that could actually be cool. And what if Peter Weller is Khan, as we've also speculated before, and as you're saying here, Cumberbatch is another augment leader, and he's coming back and kind of doing Khan's bidding.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it's interesting that they're punching up the "Who are you?" angle. They're not saying "I'm John Harrison. I'm here to blah blah blah." They're really doing the "Who are you?" I think it's a bigger deal than just he's Harrison. He's a Starfleet officer who's angry at something. This spot itself, other than Harrison, was really quite cool. We saw a couple cool trailers, one for, you know, Fast and the Furious, another one for Iron Man. It's very cool. But what Star Trek is able to bring to the big screen is stuff these other shows can't. Like, it's got a shot at the Enterprise plunging towards a planet while on fire. Like, you can't get a Fast and the Furious movie to that point. You know, Olympus Has Fallen is never going to have a starship falling out of the sky. But when you start with Star Trek, you can have an action movie that's going to really blow people away.
Yeah, because if you had a car on fire falling towards a planet in space, people are just not going to buy the premise of the movie.
Well, unless it's Dwayne Johnson. I think Dwayne Johnson could pilot a burning car through the atmosphere. I have that much faith in him.
All right. So it's, I have to say though, what I do like about this is that even after this information that we got in this trailer, we're still sitting here debating it and we're still not sure what's yep. going on, even though we think. And it's going to be fun to listen back to these Ready Rooms in the future after the movie comes out and spot all the places where we were completely wrong about
right.
what we thought was going to happen. But I think they're doing a good job of keeping everybody on their toes, and they're doing a great job of marketing because they're keeping the buzz going and they're keeping yeah. all of us talking about it constantly. And ultimately, that's the entire purpose of putting out these trailers in the first place.
So. Absolutely. Now, when you played the big game spot on your computer, Chris, did you pull out your Qualcomm Star Trek app and did you monetize the digitization protocol?
I didn't. I just downloaded the app today and used it to look at articles from Yahoo that I could see
yeah.
in my web browser.
Well, there's like points that you can earn. There's like 10 points if you go to the future site of Starfleet Academy on the Presidio, or, you know, 20 points if you scan the Esquire cover, you know, 10 points if you scan Countdown to Darkness, issue one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a little game that's being played. I don't care, I guess, enough to do it. And I heard from people during the game where they were trying to make it work, you know, during the game. It did not let them, you know, obviously they could go back and do it, you know, replay it from Apple trailers, but they couldn't get it to work during the actual Super Bowl, which seems like that's not a good ad for Qualcomm's digitization engine if it's not able to handle the load live.
Right. Well, that's because it's not built on Squarespace. That's the problem.
That's very true. But the one thing...
on Squarespace, there's no way you'd bring it down, but yeah.
Exactly. But the one thing it did have is a huge surprise. I think no one was exactly expecting this. So, of course, Star Trek is coming out on Friday, May 17th. But as soon as that trailer went online, this app allowed you to purchase tickets, advanced screening tickets, for 2 days early. That's May 15th. So fans who have this app and want to shell out the $15 a ticket can see the movie 2 days early.
Now, are you planning to do that?
Well, you know, Chris, I weighed the options. You know, I hate the 3D in this movie. I hate that JJ was forced to make it in 3D. I thought that the IMAX 3D preview looked awful, and I swore to boycott the 3D. I bought the tickets, Chris.
I knew you would.
I bought the tickets. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I mean, if for no other reason, you can at least watch Zoe Saldana in 3D for, you know. Because as Zoe has said, this is the kind of movie that was made for 3D.
Right, it's made for 3D. I don't know what that means, Zoe. I'm sorry.
Especially since she's in the movie and it wasn't actually all shot in 3D, right?
Not shot in 3D. It was a movie made to be shot in IMAX, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what that...
So,
oh, goodness. But
that's good. But I don't care if she's confused about it or not. I'd still be very happy to watch her in 3D for... couple of hours.
All of these people in 3D. I don't know. I'm hoping it's not as bad as that opening was. We'll have to see. But, you know, the idea of not watching the movie 2 days early and seeing people on my Twitter feed who had seen it, I wasn't going to let that happen. I'm sorry. I really wanted to. I really wanted to only see it in 2D ever. And I was actually thinking of buying those ThinkGeek 2D glasses. But I realized they only work with Real-D. This is going to be IMAX 3D, which I think is a completely different protocol. They're these gigantic glasses. So I'm probably going to have to experience it for the first time in 3D. So if I come out raging about how bad the movie was, it's possible I was just reacting to the stupid, stupid conversion.
I think it's going to be fine, Craig. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think you're getting too caught up in the whole 3D thing.
I had these moral things that I was holding on to. I was going to lead the fight. I was going to lead the charge. You know, it's like Aragorn says in Lord of the Rings, you know, there will come a day when the strength of man will fall, but it is not this day. Unfortunately, the strength fell. It just immediately. I held out for about 3 hours, and then, no, I bought the tickets.
Yeah. You're like me pre-ordering Star Trek things on Amazon. I have so many things on pre-order right
oh,
now.
Oh, goodness.
It's like, I'm not going to buy this. I'm not going to spend the money on it. Click. Thank you for your purchase.
I'm trying not to do the pre-order on Season 3 or the pre-order on Enterprise. Or the best. I'm trying to hold off on the pre-orders because I don't. Goodness. If they could just charge me now, maybe it wouldn't be so bad. But it's so easy just to click the button and let them charge me later.
Well, this is because we are Star Trek fans.
Yes, we are the suckers.
During the fourth season of Voyager, in Message in a Bottle, the writers introduced a formidable new foe for the Voyager crew in the form of the Hirogen, and we saw them again in bulk coming up later in the season in Hunters, Prey, and then The Killing Game, Parts 1 and 2. And today we're going to talk about The Killing Game, and to help us do that, we have with us one apparently gung-ho gal, as her screen name says today. It's our managing editor, Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Have you got a problem with that?
No, I like it. You're gung-ho. You know, you got to be gung-ho when you're fighting World War II. So.
Right.
I think you do. Yeah. Not like the other ladies back home.
That's right. Okay, guys. So it's just the three of us today, three-person panel, and we were trying to decide which Voyager episode to do, and you both suggested The Killing Game, and so here we are. So, Char, you're our Voyager editor. You're our host of To the Journey!
To the Journey!
To the Journey!
Tell us a little bit about The Killing Game.
All right. Well, this is, of course, a two-parter, which, as I observed a little bit earlier, comes after Year of Hell, Parts 1 and 2, arguably one of the best two-parters in all of Voyager. And I feel like Killing Game had a lot to live up to. So they go big with this thing, I think, with costumes, scenery. They try to do, I think they try to do a big story, but we'll have to talk about this a little bit. And of course, it's set in World War II. So we're going to have lots of guns and violence and explosions. And of course, the Hirogen, you know, basically carrying all of these things out in the holodeck, essentially punishing our crew members with these things to see just how far they can let them go till they can ship them off back to dock, fix them up, and then send them back out again. all in the name of trying to save their race, as we find out at the very, very end.
Yes, as we find out later. And we'll talk about that a little bit. We should also point out that although this is a two-parter, the episodes aired back to back on the same night on UPN. So it was not a traditional two-parter in Star Trek where you have to wait a week to find out what's going to, how the cliffhanger is going to be resolved. It was basically a TV movie that was split into two parts, I guess, kind of as a trial. And then, you know, I guess it went over okay. And so later on, we get things like Dark Frontier. We get those Voyager TV movies that come later, kind of born of this concept. Well,
and as I recall, this did go over pretty well when it first aired.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, this is one of the episodes of Voyager that I really remember. I mean, being only 12 at the time, but, you know, we sat down and watched Voyager every week. This was exciting. Like, oh, they're going to be shooting, you know, on the Paramount backlot. They're going to be doing a big Nazi storyline, you know, as we're mentioning, on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
They hadn't done Nazis in so long that it was kind of a cool thing. These aliens, the Hirogen, are actually a really cool enemy to be fighting against. I remember just having a ton of fun as a kid watching every bit of this.
Yeah, the Hirogen here, they are like the masters of armor design.
Oh, yeah.
They have so many different looks.
They do. Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. It's nice to see some variation between alien dress and look. Because we usually see them wearing the same exact thing every time.
Yeah.
One thing I'll jump in on here right away is that, first of all, I wasn't thrilled about them using World War II as a setting, just because I think it's an overused plot device in science fiction. But what it did enable them to do here, though, is create a very interesting look for the sets and very great costume design for the crew and the cast. And last week when we talked about Far Beyond the Stars, I mentioned that I've had some people tell me before that they think Far Beyond the Stars was just an excuse to get the DS9 crew out of makeup, which I think is ludicrous. But I don't know, what do you think about here? Here it feels a little bit more like, yeah, this was a way to get the crew out of makeup.
Yes. Okay. If we're going to dig into this, let's dig into it, because I feel like they did an amazing job on the costumes for this episode.
With one exception.
The hair.
With one exception.
One exception?
This horrible white tuxedo that Janeway is wearing. What is that?
It's a little ugly.
You don't like the tuxedo?
That is awful.
Oh my gosh. Okay, my co-host Lori just turned this podcast off because she loves that
it's
thing.
It's awful. It looks terrible on Kate Mulgrew. And they've got sequins on a tuxedo. No, it's awful.
No. I disagree.
What do you think,
Greg? I
think
she can rock that and the pure black.
What do I think about the tuxedo, or what do I think about the concept of the episode?
What do you think about the tuxedo first, and then we'll get back to it.
I don't mind the tuxedo. as Joe Manofsky mentions, you know, It's sort of a Humphrey Bogart look. It doesn't not work for me. She plays that character. This leads into what I'm going to say. Chris, you're going to think I'm absolutely crazy. I compared this episode to Far Beyond the Stars. Bear with me here.
Really?
Did you really?
I really do. Even outside of, we're doing them back to back. But here we are putting our heroes into another world where they're playing those characters. You know, for most of this episode, most of the two-parter, they don't know that they are themselves. So they're playing these characters. We're seeing them play out this story. But instead of it being about Janeway learning something or Seven learning something, it's about the Hirogen learning. And they put themselves with the Nazis, and their idea is, we're going to, you know, we are the master race and we are going to defeat everyone. But by the end, they realize that the Nazis' way is not the correct way. I really like the overall concept of the episode, and setting in World War II is the perfect thing to do. I don't know where else they could have set it that would have landed as solidly for me as it does. And the whole rest of the time, we're getting to see fun stuff like Jerry Ryan singing, like Tom Paris and Chakotay being, you know, American soldiers. It's just an awful lot of fun. I don't know. I mean, where would you have said it, Chris, if World War II is, you know, overdone?
I don't know for sure where I would have said it. You know, one thing that I wanted to talk about as well is whether I wanted to talk about the fact that I think the concept of this hunter race taking over a crew or a group of people, maybe they're not even on a starship, and kind of putting them through these trials to run these tests and like you said, learn about themselves, I think is interesting. I think that I feel, and when I hear you say it right now, how the Hirogen were learning and they use the Nazis to explore themselves because they do feel that they are the master race, but then they find out that, yeah, that's not the right way. And there are these brief moments of debate, like between the Alpha Hirogen and another Hirogen about what course their society should be taking. It's all very interesting. The problem that I had with this episode is that I felt like I really had to struggle to find that in the episode. Like Far Beyond the Stars very easily leads me exactly through that journey. But here it's so spotty and there's so much of this just other stuff going on and all the tech stuff about the power grids and there's all this other stuff going on that I just had trouble. I totally see what you're saying and I agree it's a great concept. And that is, I always try to look and take some kind of message out of Star Trek episode and that is what I take out of this episode. But I feel like the execution was very rough personally.
Yeah, I felt it was very different. And I agree, it's kind of buried within all this other fun stuff. Whereas with Far Beyond the Stars, even though it's a very profound message, it's there for you to grab. You get it. This, you know, I took it in a couple different ways. We already explored one. The other was this episode aired in, what, 1998, 99?
98, yeah.
98, okay. So this was, you know, a kind of a hot topic at the time. Are violent video games making people violent? And then, of course, then we start getting all the school shootings in 99 with Columbine and everything that followed thereafter. Because games like Quake were coming out and such that the first-person shooters were really getting big. I remember this. So people are thinking, well, is this a good outlet for people to kind of unplug and let out their frustration in a way that's not hurting other people? Or is this helping people to be more violent in real life, not just in a virtual reality? And I think the message you could take away from this is basically what the Hirogen needed to save themselves was a holodeck version of Call of Duty.
Yeah. That's essentially what they say. It's sort of like Blood Fever, what the doctor's trying to do where you solve Ponfar with the holodeck.
The holodeck solves all your problems.
Yes. I'll tell you, one thing this episode wasn't teaching was gun safety. I don't know if you noticed,
no.
But everyone kept their fingers on the trigger at all times.
There's one time,
Tuvok is just like standing there talking to Janeway, and he's like holding the gun in front of him, and his finger's on the trigger. He's not even like holding it correctly, but he must have his finger in behind the trigger guard every moment of this. Oh, goodness.
It's amazing that somebody didn't get shot accidentally.
I know. I mean, some of those guns.
I don't think
had,
they like, put live bullets in the guns on the set. Sure.
Well, they still have blanks on them though. Blanks are dangerous. Let's be clear. Bad things have happened to people because of blanks on sets. And
that's true.
Yeah, I was really worried for these actors, and I wish someone had taught them gun safety at some point. Whew. But yeah, you raise a good point about the video game violence. Like, this is very much about video games at the same time. So yeah.
That's a good point. I had not really thought about that particular angle. Now that you bring it up, I can definitely see that as well. While we're talking about the Nazi thing real quick, I did want to ask you guys a question. And again, when I watch this now, part of what I feel is Nazi fatigue in Star Trek. But Char, as you mentioned at the beginning, if you're watching all this stuff in first run, I believe this was the first time that we saw the Nazis used in Star Trek since Patterns of Force on the original series, because I don't recall TNG having any Nazi story of any type.
No, I don't
you know,
believe
not, not even like a little holodeck moment or anything. I don't remember there being anything
right.
like that. And DS9 had no Nazi anything on it. So now, because we had that whole weird cliffhanger on Enterprise,
yeah.
You know, leading out of the Zindi war into the fourth season, Now when I go back, and because we had those aliens that were Nazis on Enterprise as well, now here we have Hirogen as Nazis, I think that my viewing is kind of colored now. Like, I kind of feel this, what I call Nazi fatigue.
Right.
Because when you watch all this stuff out of order, that all bleeds together a little bit more than it was in reality. I mean, right. Do you guys feel that way?
Well, if you're taking all the Enterprise stuff into account, then yeah, okay, the Nazi thing is a little bit overdone. At the time that this aired, though, I think, which is kind of the point that you were saying earlier, this was interesting. This was new, and I had no problem with it at all. And in fact, yeah, I really liked it, actually, because of the quality of the sets, the clothing, the hairstyles. I mean, they did a really nice job with it, I thought.
Yeah, it felt fresher at the time.
Let's not forget, Charlene, this is the prequel to Fairhaven.
Oh,
they,
yes,
of course,
that's
are
right.
Gallivanting around the Fairhaven sets that they'll revisit 2 years later.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because I definitely was going to mention that to Char.
I can't not think of Fairhaven while watching this. And then while watching Fairhaven, I can't not think of The Killing Game. It's like the holodeck only has so many world models. So I guess it kind of works that it's just the Paramount Backlot Europe set. It's a good set, though. Like, both times, it looks really authentic for TV.
Yeah.
I wish they would go and they would punch up on the screen as they're activating the holodeck program sometime, and across the screen it would read Paramount Backlot Program B.
Right.
Right. Have like 001, and then for Fairhaven 003, some other 009, 0010.
Now, please select the backlot theme that you would like to apply
your choosing
to this program.
Right. But, right. I mean, the main difference between this and the Enterprise episode, or even any of the TOS episodes, is what I was talking about with the fact that they spend so much of the episode not knowing that they are in the holodeck at all, that they're just playing these characters. I think I love those parts of the episode almost a little bit more than near the end, when they are just teching the tech all the time.
Yeah. The part two of this episode is much weaker for me than part one, because part two really becomes kind of this ridiculous deal with disabling the neural.
Yeah. Well, it starts with part one, where you've got poor dumb Harry expanding the holodeck. It's like, okay, so the power grid.
Yes.
You can't pull power out of the holodeck, but you can pump power into it. Okay.
Right.
Apparently.
I also wanted to talk about, I have two words for this, but one of them is the magical morphing power grid. Because
yes.
Now look, and this ties into my other one, which is the continuity grab bag. And the problem here is that we have been told time and time again on Voyager that the holodeck can continue to function while the rest of the systems on the ship can't, because it's on an independent power grid that's not compatible.
Not compatible.
Right.
But here, Harry tells the Hirogen that the holodeck's required an enormous amount of power, and I've already transferred power from this system and this system and this system, and next to go is life support, and I can't keep doing it. How is he transferring all this power if the power grids are incompatible? And even worse, the Hirogen says, I'll bring some power modules over from my ship, and you can tie them into your systems.
Yeah. Okay, so one of two things is happening here. Either the whole thing about the holodeck running on its own power supply is a total lie. Or Harry is lying the whole time to the Hirogen.
Right.
Well, I don't
Which
think Harry's lying
for
because...
Harry.
But he is getting power into the system somehow.
Yeah.
So I don't think Harry's lying.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
that's true.
There's the power thing. There's also that they're expanding where the holodeck projectors go. I kept screaming at my screen, that's not how the holodeck works.
Right.
Like, it's all magic, and it's smoke and mirrors, and it's tricking you into thinking it's bigger. You don't need the space of a small European town in order to have a small European town in the holodeck.
Right, because at
I
one point...
I didn't understand that.
The majority of the ship has been turned into a holodeck at one point. I think
basically,
they say it's like 5,000 square meters or something like that. It's
the Nazi headquarters blows up, and it like blows three decks out. Like,
right.
That's not... Guess. No, the ceiling is right. It's right above you. You just imagine I don't...
I'm not sure what they were getting at with that anyway. What was the point of that, except for Harry to be the Hirogen's bitch?
And you remember there was the whole drawn out over the course of many, many episodes, the whole project to put holo emitters on the bridge so that the Doctor could come to the bridge. If it's so difficult to put holo emitters on the bridge, how is PDH by himself turning the entire fracking ship into a holodeck?
Well, if only they had had Hirogen power modules this whole time. This whole thing, they could have just had the Doctor everywhere from the beginning.
He could patch people up and just send them back in more quickly that way, right? Okay, but this is just one of the funny little...
Right, well, that's where it starts.
It's actually humorous to me.
In the first episode, it's falling apart a little bit when you've got these Harry scenes, and it's like, what's going on? But at least you're getting the little moments of finding out what's going on, because it's really cool that the Hirogen have taken over the ship, like, before the episode starts. Yeah. Like, we don't start with Captain, there's a blip on the radar, and, oh my God, it's a Hirogen, and no, they're beaming up. No, we just get into it.
The intro is one of the things I like about this episode the most. Because it raises all these questions when you're watching it. Okay, Janeway is a Klingon. Why is she a Klingon? Why is she fighting other Klingons? And then come to find out there's this Hirogen here. She's on the holodeck. Okay, what's going on and why are they doing this? Cut to the main show intro. Okay, I'm going to watch.
Yeah. I still don't know why Captain Janeway was a Klingon, but it did get me excited when I watched the beginning of the episode.
It did what it needed to do. I didn't really care after that why she was a Klingon. Got me interested.
I think later on, as we go along, and you know, there's the part towards the resolution where she goes and she tries to make a deal with Neelix, who is a Klingon also. And the Hirogen, as they go through the database and they find different warrior races or who they can kind of identify with as formidable opponents for their hunt, they, of course, found the Klingons and they latched onto that. So it is kind of interesting that because we do jump right in there with Janeway as a Klingon, you're left with the impression, you know, who knows how long this has been going on. They've been running all these Klingon simulations, and so they do throw us right in the middle of the story. So yeah, Greg, I agree. It is nice, and it's unlike Voyager that Harry doesn't detect an anomaly being caused by an anomaly.
Right.
causing an anomaly that allows the Hirogen to be on the ship, which is what we would normally get. This was throw you in the middle of the story.
And they don't even do nice flashbacks. Like if this was a Battlestar Galactic episode, we would have flashed back over the course of the episode to how the Hirogen got on board. But no one really cares. The point of it is the Hirogen on board, they've taken over completely. Now, how do we get out of it? It's one of the coolest intros to a Voyager episode that I can think of.
Also on the point of continuity, and we'll actually talk about this at the end when we talk about the resolution, but while they threw a lot of continuity out the window here with how the holodeck and the power grids work and all, they did another thing that they don't do so often on Voyager, which is to set up something that they will use later on by giving holodeck technology to the Hirogen, because, you know, they do come back to that later on where you have holographic beings created by Hirogen kind of rebelling against them. So that was, they throw continuity out the window on the one hand, but then they set something up on the other hand, which is a grab
bag. That's so Voyager.
Yeah.
That's so Voyager. We should put that on t-shirts.
We should.
Well, and we were talking about like why they were using these different things. It is really cool how they built to the very end of the episode where you've got Klingons fighting Nazis, fighting Hirogen, all these people fighting with each other in this huge end battle. You kind of wish that they'd brought in a few other things, like, you know, what else with Hirogen doing? Like, let's have, you know, people out of some holo novels, like those children from Janeway's holo novel. Maybe they could have joined in the fight at the end.
In ulam remne preparamus. Is your Latin a bit rusty?
Let's kill them.
Well, and don't forget about the Andorians that they were fighting.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Yes.
Of course, of course. And you know what I think was really missing from this whole scenario? Barrel rolls.
There really should have been some.
There should have been a lot of them in here. Yeah, that's a definite missed opportunity.
Prime chance. Yeah.
I guess barrel rolls weren't very popular during World War II. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, the problem is if you do a barrel roll while your finger's on the trigger, you're going to shoot yourself or your friend. They kept doing barrel rolls and, oh, shoot, we lost another crew member. Maybe I should stop.
Maybe I should stop rolling all over the ship.
Whoopsie.
But why don't we talk about the kind of central theme here, Greg, which you brought up a little bit earlier, which is the way that the Hirogen are exploring the Nazis and they come to the realization that maybe this isn't the right way. There's a really good scene in here where, and I mentioned this, the Alpha Hirogen and the Hirogen are, I guess they're in Janeway's ready room, aren't they? And that's what it looks like. Uh-huh. And they're having this kind of deep conversation about the course of civilization and how the hunt has kind of driven them almost to extinction because their society has fallen apart and they're scattered and their numbers are dwindling. And so you have a philosophical debate about whether conquest, and if you think back to past human history as we were expanding and the world was very much about conquest, more so than it is at the moment, which direction should they go in? And then so there's this power struggle within the Hirogen on the ship. And that conversation for me is actually the best part of these two episodes combined. And it's better than the one between the Hirogen and Janeway later on the same topic. I found it more interesting to have the Hirogen discussing it amongst themselves rather than them talking to an outsider as a human about it.
Hmm. Well, I liked the discussion between the two Hirogen because it came in episode one and was sort of just hinting at what the episode was all about. The episode, the discussion between Janeway and the Hirogen was a little on the nose. Like, this is why we're doing this. This is why we... Whereas, between the Hirogen, it was kind of, we know what's going on, but we're not going to exposition it at the audience. But we're going to discuss it. But it's a really cool thing. You know, it's the same way, you know, hunters have on Earth have to worry about not overkilling. You know, they'll run into a place where they've run out of this game and then they won't be able to hunt it at all. But on a deeper level, you know, it's the sort of thing of once you rule the world, well, what then? You know, and it's what the Nazis were going to run into eventually. You know, once they took over all of Europe, you just have to keep fighting and keep fighting and fighting. And then, okay, now you're over the whole Earth and now you're all Aryans. Is this really a viable concept? Like, I feel like the Nazis never thought it all the way through. And that's what sort of they're talking about. The Hirogen didn't really think their concept all the way through. They killed all of the game on their home planet. Then they expanded. Finally, they're having a crisis. And it's always cool when an alien race can have a crisis. Think back to TNG with the Klingons and having this crisis of what are we going to do? We can't keep fighting. We can't keep arguing. We've got to figure out where to go. And here it is again, Starfleet helping them find their way. Would I be wrong that the Hirogen are kind of the most interesting bad guys on Voyager? And a lot of it is because of this episode and this crisis that they go through.
In all of Voyager?
That's what I'm saying.
I don't completely agree with you.
I think you could say they had the most potential. They introduced a depth to them here that could have been explored further and fleshed out. I don't know. Yeah, the Hirogen, I think the Vidians could have been very interesting.
The Vidians had a cool crisis as well.
Yes, yeah. I agree that the Hirogen were one of the very best we saw on Voyager, but the Vidians win my vote because they have such a good reason for doing what they do.
Right. There's a great moral ambiguity to what the Vidians are doing.
I empathize with that. Like way more than I do with the Hirogen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
That's true.
In that case.
Yeah. I empathize with where they're coming from because they have this, we believe this. It's sort of like this Nazi officer that we meet who he doesn't really believe the stuff he's saying, but he's being told the Aryan race is amazing and you should do all the stuff. And, you know, he's not blue eyed, you know, he's got brown eyes himself, but he's just going along with it. And I think
he's
all he needs somebody to tell him, look, stop doing this. You know, these holographic Americans who are coming aren't your enemy. You're all, you know, you're all holographic people, whether you're holographic Germans, you're holographic Americans. We really need to come together. And, you know, it doesn't happen with the Nazis, but I like that it can happen with the Hirogen. I love the scene at the end where even after everything goes to hell and they fight each other and it's pandemonium in the halls, there still is that scene at the end where the Hirogen come to the conclusion that we really do need these Starfleet people to help us. That's the only way we're going to move forward. And it's a great touching end to what, yes, has some technobabble, but I think it's powerful.
It is powerful. You don't see that happen very often with adversaries who are just as powerful, if not possibly more powerful, than our Starfleet heroes here. Like you mentioned earlier, the Klingons are just about the only race we've seen this happen to. I can't really think of any big others.
To this end, if I can just point out a line by the Alpha Hirogen here, which kind of falls apart overall in what he's saying, but what he tells the younger officer, though, is he says, species that don't change die, and we've lost our way. We've allowed our predatory instincts to dominate us. And that's the message in here that I do like, because that's the message that can speak to us now watching this in Voyager, even though this was, you know, filmed back in 98, because it's kind of an ongoing and possibly eternal problem for the human race as well, as we try to overcome the predatory instincts, which all you have to do is watch the news to know that that's still a major obstacle in our society right now.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, and this is why I talk about it being the Voyager far beyond the stars. You know, it's got issues. It's not as deep, as powerful, you know, whereas, you know, maybe Sisko's story was for Black History Month. This is kind of for Holographic Americans History Month. And it's not quite as, you know, not quite as powerful, but it's still an interesting moral to get to.
I think Far Beyond the Stars was a character story. I mean, it connects with you because of Benny Russell as a character, whereas this one is a broader message about the society,
right,
rather than an individual. So there's a lot more action going on in here. And, you know, Far Beyond the Stars was so pensive that it keeps you engaged all the way through, I think.
Where, right.
Here I would kind of zone out during some of the stuff that was going on.
What could you zone out during? There's so many great moments. I mean, Paris doesn't show up for so long, but he shows up and he's just fantastic. You know, Robert Doug McNeil is just waiting for moments like this to get out of his costume, to use that 40 slang he's been practicing. Yeah. You've got Roxanne Dawson showing her pregnant belly, but, you know, in the episode, it's a holographic baby that she can feel kicking. That's just such a goofy concept. I love it.
I don't know if zone out is the right term. I think what happened to me is at the beginning, they went in the club and Jeri Ryan turned her head when she was singing and I saw her lips and basically I forgot everything that happened after that. So.
Your heart melted and that was it.
Yeah,
huh?
That's pretty much it. There is one thing in here though. This is a missed marketing opportunity. When this episode came out, Paramount, they really should have partnered with some video game company and released a video game. It would have been like Paperboy. Do you know that old video game Paperboy where you rode the bicycle and you threw the papers? Well, this would have been kind of the same concept, except you would have been Neelix delivering baguettes.
And you might get stopped by Hirogen troops every now and then. They'll spill your wine and eat your bread.
You lose points when they snap your baguettes in half. It's like, you only were able to deliver four whole baguettes.
There you go.
Exactly.
Somebody please make that. I'll play.
It needs to be like an 8-bit game. Just doop,
yes.
Doop, doop,
it does.
Doop,
yeah.
Doop,
doop, doop, with doop, cheesy music.
Yes.
That'd be so yes, awesome.
They can do the theme music from Neelix's Good Morning Voyager show, but do it, you know, in 8-bit style.
Right.
Oh, man.
How great, I mean, Neelix was completely useless in this episode, but how great was Ethan Phillips?
Oh, yeah, okay. I was going to say useless. No, getting drunk with Klingons is not useless.
But
that
why?
Was brilliant.
There's no reason he got drunk with Klingons. There's no reason he had, like, Klingon ridges over his Talaxian makeup. But Ethan Phillips was amazing for every moment of where he steps up and starts shouting at those Klingons, "Gar, you rapscapple, blah, 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 blah." He's so good.
He did. He got into it. I really loved him hanging out with those Klingons. That the only thing that was better, in my opinion, once again, I think that Robert Picardo steals the show as the Doctor with his one-liners. My favorite, of course, because I'm a cat person, is they're Klingons, not kittens.
Yes.
But he's got lots of great snappy lines like that. Steals every scene he's in and then some. And he's not in this episode very much, but still pulls it off, in my opinion.
Well, he's very important to the episode. Though I think what Greg's saying is that you could take Neelix out of the episode and you wouldn't really miss anything in the story. Now, of course, the Doctor is critical to the story.
Now that we know what came out of it, I think, that's a valuable opportunity you do keep in.
Right. Compare the Doctor.
If we don't get the video game, I mean, if he weren't in there, we couldn't have the Baguette Boy game, so.
Right.
Right.
Well, so compare real quick the Doctor, the EMH here, to 2 years earlier, the EMH on the Enterprise E, where he's really completely useless against the Borg. He distracts them for all of, like, 10 seconds. Starts asking that, like, if their skin is irritated. Here, he's a full-blown resistance fighter. He's transporting himself from one part of the ship to the other. He's really good. I love the Doctor in this episode.
Do you guys think that, off of the episode topic here, though, bringing that up about the Doctor, is he the character that has the best arc in the series?
That's very, very,
very
possible.
Possible,
yeah. I mean, Tom. Everyone brings up Tom.
Well, Tom.
Because he went from... convict to loving husband and father.
Yeah, but you could definitely make a case for the Doctor. That's a very tough question.
Yeah,
I would say of the, quote, non-humanoids, he's got possibly the best arc.
Wait, so who else are we putting in here? The gel packs?
Are we saying for all the shows? Chat? Like,
you mean all the shows? I thought you were talking about Voyager. Like, so what? We have the Doctor and the gel packs.
I'm going even bigger. I kind of switched it from just Voyager to all the non-humans.
So you're including Spock. You're including,
and Spock is good,
right?
Yeah. But the Doctor was so well
you're including
developed.
Data. You're including Pulaski,
and Spot, Porthos, the gel packs.
Right.
Yes. Yes, I am. He's got the best arc.
Let's don't forget Shatner's toupee, which we talked about many shows ago.
Yes.
That was actually watching everything, observing from his head.
It's actually the Tribble King. Yes. A little worrisome there.
He was very important.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I like Phlox better than the Doctor, but as far as having an arc, yes, the Doctor has the best arc of those, although people would say Data, but no, whatever. I like Data, Data's... Data went to a certain point, then stopped. Whereas the Doctor, from beginning to end, like, I wanted Voyager to continue so I could see more of the Doctor's story. He had more places to go, more
they
things
to
learn
about. They should have done a spinoff show with the Doctor. Like, you know, Joey got his own show after Friends. I think the Doctor should have got his own show after Voyager.
Yeah, exactly. They could have called it Joe.
Right, Joe. Sort of like, what was the MASH spinoff? Where it was just that one Trapper John MD, was that it?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But with Joe post Voyager. And he's just a small town holographic doctor trying to make his way in the Midwest.
It could have been on CBS and it would be Joe PV. Because they always like to have a name, comma, and then something at the end. Like Walker, Texas
That's
Ranger,
true.
Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Joe, Post-Voyager Doctor.
Or he could go for the comedy angle, put it on Adult Swim, and have NTSF, SD, DOC.
Right.
Which Kate Mulgrew is brilliant on.
I hear really good stuff about that. Whatever it's called, I hear really good things about it.
It's really called NTSF SD SUV. Great show.
That's fantastic.
Can I ask you guys another question while we're on the topic of Klingons and the different races that they pulled out of the database, that the Hirogen pulled out of the database? Another thing I was a little surprised by was, this is a hunter race living in the Delta Quadrant. They discovered the Borg in Voyager's database and were planning that they'll do Wolf 359 later. How did they not know about the Borg already?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
How did that not happen yet?
The Borg space issue is a little difficult. Like, they treated it like Borg space was here, and then they treated it like Borg space was everywhere. And yeah, I always felt like they should have just had little splotches of Borg all through the show, and everyone knew about the Borg and everyone was afraid of the Borg, but we didn't always see them, but they were this constant threat, and we really, really never got that, even after the Borg were introduced on the show.
Like cameo appearances, like they beam down into a planet and they're in a market and there's like one Borg drone in the crowd in the background, like... They never feature in the episode, but they're just there. They're kind of like Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
Well, right.
Special appearance by 4 of 5.
Right. Well, it's like that guy in the market on Encounter at Farpoint who's selling like drapes or something, and he just gives them a look. That may have been a Borg. You never know. Borg in disguise.
I don't know. I felt like we had so much of the Borg as a threat on Voyager. That having a constant threat, like a cold war of Borg, if you will, that constant fear, oh, are they going to show up? Are they already here? When are we going to run into them next? That would have gotten so old on me. No, I can't do it.
I would have liked to see less Borg on screen, but more just they meet a race and the Borg just come up in conversation. Oh, she's a Borg. Whisper, whisper, whisper. Like that, I just think that would have been more fun and would have connected the world a little bit more.
Or like, boy, I haven't seen a starship this advanced since my buddy and I, we were visiting old Tau Calus 3 last year, and we were in this cafe and there was this Borg having coffee across the way. And
just passing references, yes. I've got this death sentence in 9 Borg systems.
Greg, I really wish our listeners could see the look that Char is giving us on the screen right now.
She does not want Borg in her show. Not at all.
What is happening? I'm so confused.
All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about the resolution. Okay. So now, I call this resolution, here, have some technology. Because, you know, that's...
That's pretty much it.
It's kind of... Janeway's solution to things from time to time. It's like, okay, well, we'll give you some technology, or we'll give you some stories, or we'll give you this
right.
or that, which probably violates, you know, 14 Starfleet regulations. But
well, yeah, okay. Yeah. We compared season 4 Janeway giving the Hirogen holodeck technology and season 2 Janeway when she's not going to give the Kazon an iota of technology.
Yeah.
She's changing just a little bit. She's flexing out. The Delta Quadrant is changing her.
To be fair, the Hirogen had taken over the entire ship and were holding her people hostage. I think giving away like a little holographic emitter is a pretty fair trade to just have their ship back. The Hirogen could have taken the whole ship and blown it up.
This is true.
Yeah.
But the Kazon also did hijack the ship and leave them on a barren planet.
Yeah, but that's the Kazon. They're not that much of a threat, well, even after they have your ship in their possession.
Well, the Kazon were idiots, which I think she just kind of had a little bit of a problem with wanting to compromise with them at all, because they would have just said, more, more,
right.
more!
Well,
Whereas I think with the Hirogen, this was a much more of a level peace treaty.
Yeah, she empathized with them. This is sort of like the opposite of the Treaty of Versailles, you know, where we pounded Germany into submission and it backfired. Janeway was saying, what do we need to do to solve the overall problem? It's a very Picard solution. Like, it's Picard mixed with Janeway. Like, I don't know that Picard would have given anybody technology. He might have just made a speech. But Janeway's saying, look, here's the thing you need to fix your society. Good luck. I think that's a good captain. It's a good captain move.
I can't disagree with her decision. Looks like you said, Greg, I mean, they were in a stalemate. They were all going to ultimately die at this point. The ship was not recoverable. And that's something else we'll mention in a minute. But I can't argue with her decision. You know, I mean, I think she was pretty much forced into coming up with a solution like this. Now, it begs the question of whether it's the right decision to... It's not exactly a prime directive question, as we know the prime directive, because, you know, that's supposed to apply to whether you have warp capabilities or such. But if you just think about it in terms of giving some sort of... giving a society a sudden leap forward technologically. You know, if you think, like, if aliens came to Earth today and they gave us replicator technology or transporter technology or something, what impact would it have on our society if we didn't develop this naturally, but we suddenly had these seemingly magical powers? Now, she gives them this holographic technology, and then later on in the seventh season in Flesh and Blood, Voyager responds to a distress call from the Hirogen. And it turns out that the problem and all this carnage is caused by the holographic technology that Janeway gave them. So there is this outcome to this decision, even though I would agree that her hand was forced and she maybe didn't have a choice.
Right. I am glad that they did follow up on this whole thing and did show that there are some profound consequences to this whole thing. This is why you don't give technology to people who do not develop it on their own.
I agree. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I would have liked to have seen more in Voyager, as I always say. This is
missed was Ian Malcolm over in the corner saying, "You can't just give them technology. They didn't earn it themselves. They're taking what someone else is and trying to take it." If only they had Ian Malcolm. They would have figured it out, what he was trying to say at some point. I don't know if that made any sense. But life will find a way, is basically what Ian Malcolm was trying to say. And you know, the Hirogen will find a way to screw up just holographic technology. They're not going to just spend their time doing Big Game Hunter on the holodeck. They have to screw it up somehow.
I hate to think what they turned Baguette Boy into, though.
Oh, dear. Well,
turned it into some kind of really... Like you have to shoot Baguette Boy as he tries to deliver his baguettes.
Right.
You are not Baguette Boy in this version. You are actually snipers hiding behind houses trying to get him.
Well, instead of Dixon Hill, it's like Judge Dredd. And you know, someone comes in with a problem, he just hunts him down and shoots him in the face. It's a different kind of Dixon Hill.
Hirogen Dixon Hill. Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
But I agree, Char. I like the fact that they did take this turn of events in The Killing Game and then use it again three seasons later in Flesh and Blood. And they did show, there is some consequence to a decision here. It's the kind of thing that I always say with Voyager, I would have liked to have seen more. It's why, although I like Voyager, sometimes the stories kind of fall flat for me because of that lack of follow through. And now I just said that the ship was unrecoverable. And Janeway, she makes two statements in this episode. She says that the damage to the ship is extensive and both sides have suffered enormous casualties. And I think the doctor somewhere references, we can kind of get a number, like the Voyager crew had lost at least 28 crew members at one point, maybe it's more. But let's not forget, okay, so Voyager, and actually, Char, you guys did a show on To the Journey recently about non-renewable resources, right? And how it's difficult for Voyager to replenish things. And Harry has turned almost the entire ship into a holodeck. And they've blown out who knows how many decks in this battle that's going on.
Yeah.
And they've suffered all these casualties. But next week, we've got just a normal Voyager story.
Reset button.
Back to
yeah,
normal.
Everything's hunky-dory.
It's not like even they included a reset button in the episode. We just assume that there's some sort of reset button that gets pushed and everything's back to normal next week.
Yeah. Actually, when I was watching the very end of part two, I thought, okay, press the reset button in 3, 2, click.
Yeah.
Go on to the next episode because Netflix will play them just one after the other if you let it.
I mean, tell me, and maybe I'm talking to the wrong crowd here with the two of you. At least I know Greg feels the same way I do. Am I wrong as a fan watching Voyager to want some follow through? Like the next week when they do vis-a-vis, is it wrong for me to want them to, in addition to the story that's going on, to also be dealing with some of the consequences and repairs to the ship from what just happened with the Hirogen?
Oh yeah. You're preaching to the choir here. I think we all wanted to see more of this on Voyager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Battlestar Galactica thing that we got, is that little bit of continuity between even standalone episodes, and it would have been great to see it.
So say we all.
It just makes it feel more real for me. A lot of fans,
right.
I think, I mean, they get tired of hearing me say it because they think I'm ragging on
Voyager. But it's true, though. I mean, I would have loved a throwaway line about how the holodeck is still not quite functioning right because they're still repairing damage that was caused or something.
Right.
And some kind of visual.
All the injuries, like Neelix has shattered bones
that
in his shoulder
too.
From being shot, and
what if he needs physical therapy and he's visiting the doctor or something? They could have shown that.
Yeah. But for all of the complaining that Voyager did it, you know, in the Voyager way, that there is that reset button, that it's a little silly, this is a story that only Voyager could have told. You know, no one was going to attack DS9 and then expand the holo suites to fill the entire station. The Federation's not that far away on DS9,
right.
On TNG. Even on TOS, they didn't have the holodeck. They couldn't do this sort of show, really. Voyager's the only show that could do it. And I love that they took those opportunities to say, look, what sort of premise do we have? What sort of bad guys do we have? What can only we do? And I love that out of Voyager.
Yes, yes. They needed to do more stuff like this that was uniquely Voyager.
All right. Well, why don't we... There's a lot more to talk about here, but I think that's a good transition to some final thoughts on the episode, since we have discussed the resolution and the handing off of the technology. So, Char, any other final thoughts you have about the killing game?
Well, I think they aimed high, tried to go big, especially following up with Year of Hell as the next two-parter. They felt like they raised the bar, got such a good reception, they needed to keep it up. And I felt like they got it just about half right, as Voyager tends to do. I felt like they did a decent job. I enjoy watching this episode. It's fun. They do a fantastic job with what I feel are the more superficial things, like the costumes and the hair and the sets. They're very authentic, and I really appreciate what they did as far as that workmanship. Had they had a story that matched up to the grandeur of this, this could have been one of the best in Trek. But I feel like the message of the story just kind of, it's sold short. It falls flat. They didn't do nearly as much with it as they could have, I think. So, good, but again, a little bit of lost potential here. They could have gone even bigger and better and blown us out of the water. I'm going to give this one maybe 7 gung-ho gals.
I thought I was going to come into this episode being the one who disliked it, because I kept shouting at the screen, you know, the holodeck doesn't work that way. I don't understand why this is happening. But in the end, I really enjoyed this episode. I think it sounds like more than you guys really did. As Charlotte was talking about those little moments, there's a point where one of the Hirogen pours wine, like really, really delicately. I'm like, oh, there's a little fancy Hirogen. It's like they didn't forget these little moments. How could you forget the doctor sort of peeking out from under the awning and getting some rain on his head and sort of looking up? And the fact that they were shooting on location and so it rained. So we've got rain in a Star Trek episode. Like, how often does that happen? Where they've got right. this whole battle in the rain. I really, really like The Killing Game. I rate this as one of my top Voyager episodes, which, yes, okay, admittedly, it has these problems, and I would say all of Voyager has pretty much all those problems. So it's across the board, maybe a lower bar for Voyager. But I had fun, and I can't always say that when I turn on TNG Next Gen and DS9. So I really like this one. I think I would give it maybe 8.5 holographic baby kicks.
Yeah, I mean, you guys make good points, and I know I've been kind of critical of the episode here. I totally agree that the costume design, the set design, the lighting is fantastic, especially the scenes inside the bar. It's all really well done. The stuff on the backlot for me, some of it's okay, some of it, you know, the Nazi buildings in the background, all it's a little bit bright actually, but visually, great episode. I agree, it's a fun episode. It's fun to watch. It's not an episode that I want to come back to and rewatch over and over. It's something like maybe I'll watch it once every few years as I maybe go through Voyager. I think I agree, Char, with what you said, that there's a great premise here. And I think if they could have made the story more Hirogen-centric and followed through, take that conversation between the Alpha Hirogen and the other Hirogen and explore that internal debate within the Hirogen society a little bit more through the whole episode. And they could have still done the same stuff that they did, but just craft it so we're exploring that issue a little bit more all the way through. It would have been stronger for me in the end.
Yeah.
I think the episode raises some really interesting questions. It just doesn't go far enough in actually talking about them. But it does raise an interesting point at the very end, like we said, where Janeway actually gives them technology. And then they do revisit this in season 7. So there is some payoff from that as well as we go through the series. So overall, fun episode. I do like it, but I think I'm going to have to give this one only 5 baguettes.
Broken or whole?
Whole, 5 whole baguettes and an empty bottle of wine that was poured out by a Hirogen. So what is that?
There you go.
All right.
It's like 5.5. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. There. Well, Char, thank you for joining us today on our 3-person panel. And of course, everyone knows
of course.
You all around Trek FM, but go ahead and tell everyone, especially our Voyager fans, where they can find you if they would like to know more.
Certainly. Yeah. First and foremost, you can find me on To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Hey, not bad, guys. Well done.
Better. We've been practicing.
With Lori and Tristan, we discuss Voyager every single week. So if you are a Voyager fan and you haven't already given that a whirl, do that. We hope you like it. But of course, I'm also all over Trek FM. I write, I manage things, I edit things. I do all sorts of things. And then I'm the Garrick of the Ready Room, so I'm here fairly often. And you can also find me on Twitter. My username is Oh the Profanity.
Watching that episode today, Chris, those 2 episodes really encouraged me to actually get back to my Voyager rewatch, which I kind of abandoned. I was so excited when I finished DS9 and finished Enterprise. I was like, I'm going to start Voyager. Then season 1 was like, that's this show again. But I remembered. I really do like these characters, seeing them, you know, out of being themselves, having a little bit more fun, and then seeing them be themselves again, still having fun. It's like, yeah, I really actually do like Voyager quite a bit. I want to get to see all the episodes that are around this. I'm excited about Voyager again after this.
I'm starting to feel bad. I'm starting to feel like listeners think that we do Voyager episodes to tear them apart. But if you listen back to all the Ready Rooms that we've done on Voyager, it's really not the case.
Oh, no.
I mean, we've covered some great episodes that we've absolutely loved. And I love Voyager. I like all the Star Trek stuff. I didn't mention it in the discussion, but it's interesting in this episode how even when the characters still don't know who they are. They just think they're, you know, playing the role in World War II. Their personalities are still the same.
Yeah.
You know, Catherine is still, my opinion is the only one that matters. And Tuvok is still suspicious of Seven. And Seven is still very Borg-like in her thinking because this is still season four.
And Chakotay is still mostly useless.
And Neelix is still happy all the time. Still, you know. So, yeah.
It's fun. And when I say that the bar for Voyager episodes is lower, I just mean you kind of have to go with Voyager a little bit. That sometimes it's going to be a little goofy. Yeah. The holodeck just isn't going to make sense. And it's fine. It's not that serious a show. So it's maybe not a lower bar. I mean, it's just a different bar.
It's a different bar. The problem we have is that we compare the series to each other, the different series to one another. Right. Which is fine and it's interesting to do, but sometimes you have to compare the episodes to other episodes within the same series and forget about the other series and take it for what it is.
Yeah.
And that's also perfectly fine. All right. Well, let's tell everyone where they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on The Killing Game, Voyager, anything else we talked today. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There is a form there. Fill that in, send it to the ready room. That'll come to me, it'll come to Greg, and hopefully it won't go to anyone else that we don't know. I'd better go check the settings. So you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, where we have a very rapidly growing community. And you can, of course, find us on Twitter under username trekfm, where Greg and myself and Char and Landrew tweet from that same account. Now, Greg, what if people want to find you?
Well, they can definitely find me on the Twitter sphere, where I can be found talking about various geeky things at Greg Harbin, GregHarbin, as well as hopefully people read my review of Countdown to Darkness number 1, the comic, which was released last week. Hopefully I'll be doing more of those in the future, especially with Countdown to Darkness, which is such an exciting comic. And as well, you can catch me on the Observation Lounge, which is my weekly geeky news roundup that I usually do with Catherine and Drew. This week, we're going to be doing a special episode about the Netflix series House of Cards. So if you are interested, go ahead and watch the show now. It's all out on Netflix, 13 episodes. Watch it all before Sunday's show because we will be doing spoilers. I think that's going to be a really fun episode this week.
Well, you can find me on a couple of shows besides this one. You can find me with Matthew Rushing over on Literary Treks, where we talk about books and comics, and on The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. And this week on Literary Treks, we sat down with David A. Goodman, who just put together that new book, Federation, The First 150 Years. He also wrote one of the most famous Futurama episodes, the Star Trek episode. And he also wrote for Enterprise in seasons 2 and 3. And although we talked about the book, we actually spent maybe the first half of the interview talking about behind-the-scenes writing of Enterprise during seasons 2 and 3. So it's interesting there, even if you're not into the books as much. If you're into Enterprise, go check that one out. And on The Orb, we had a very deep discussion about Dr. Bashir.
Very cool.
That was fun, too. All right. Well, Greg, let's also take a moment and say thank you to our sponsor, Squarespace, and remind everyone, whether you want to make a personal blog or you want to make a giant website for your company or for your own project, there's no easier way than Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK2 to save 10%, and you'll be helping us bring this programming to you each week, and you'll be helping our sponsor at the same time. So, Greg, I think it's time to let everybody go. I've got a really big project on my hands today. I'm installing holo emitters outside of the studio. I'm trying to turn my entire house into a giant holodeck.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick a Borg-modified grenade pin in it. Because the Ready Room is done.